Coming up this week in computer hardware, Vega benchmarks. You can't buy one, but we know how fast they are. Do we have a pricing problem? Samsung's portable SSD T5 VRAM prices are on the rise, and the Surface did have some problems. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 428, recorded on August 17th, 2017. AMD Vega 64. You can't buy one, and the price is probably going up anyway. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by WordPress. Your customers want to find you. Build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/Twitch. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to Ring.com/Twitch and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most informative, most engaging, most delightful, and sometimes either the most expensive or the most bargain-filled news about PC and mobile hardware available anywhere in this universe and any known and or undiscovered universe. I'm feeling random today, but keeping me grounded, the man himself, Alan Malventano, joining us from PC Purr. Are you feeling the love today, Alan?
I don't know. That's a lot of pressure to try to keep you grounded, Patrick. I don't know. I don't know.
Well,
if I
are you ready
that.
To talk about hardware?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I talk about hardware.
Yeah.
I've been known to do that from time to time.
From time to time. AMD Radeon Vega 56/64. The end of practically a year-long journey for the new top-of-the-line consumer parts, graphics parts from AMD. The short version is the 1080 Ti, NVIDIA's GTX 1080 Ti, is 25-30% faster than, of course, the 1080 and the Vega 64 air-cooled version. The 64s are already sold out. The 56, as near as I can tell, hasn't been offered for sale anywhere. Matter of fact, the AMD NVIDIA 64, we found it basically sold out on Newegg. Haven't seen it available on Amazon at all. The AMD Vega 56, which is actually the new price leader at $399 over the 1070, which is perfect since I bought a 1070 a few weeks ago for monitor testing, is not on sale as of yet. So don't expect NVIDIA prices to drop in response to release the release of the AMD Radeon Vega 56 and 64. On top of that, VGA RAM prices have spiked like 30%. Quotes August from DigiTimes, August quotes for RAMs using VGA graphics cards have risen to US$8.50, up by 30.8% from $6.50 in July. Both RAM industry leaders Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix have allocated part of their VGA RAM production capabilities to producing memories for servers and handsets, fueling the price rally. So, you know, I'm not, you know, memory is probably not the largest expense in a GPU, but it's not helping. Samsung apparently supplies 55% of worldwide VGA RAM shipments, SK Hynix 35%, Micron Technology 10%. You know, this is interesting. Solid state drive prices have not exactly been going down as fast as we'd like for the last 12 months. It seems like, well, you know, the quote from sources by Aaron Lee, working and Joseph Tsai on DigiTimes, was that the upstream supply chain expect pricing to go even higher in September. Shortages will pose a great challenge to graphics card and gaming notebook players over their abilities to handle component inventory. This is exciting. I mean, you were at Flash Memory Summit last week. Was anybody talking about the sort of supply issues with RAM?
No, I did not overhear anything along those lines.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this is obviously, you know, VRAM stuff, like the high-end RAM going into GPUs, but different RAM segment than I guess what would be going into flash drives. But I would not expect GPU prices to drop at all.
As a matter of fact, if you look at the next story, they might actually be going up a little more than what we were ready for. Gamers Nexus, Steve over at Gamers Nexus just put this up recently. So apparently that $499 or that $399 price that you were just talking about for the Vega 56 was basically like introductory discount price. Mm-hmm. In other words, there was a rebate that the vendors would get to be able to offer them at that price, implying that, you know, when you consider the margin and everything, like they couldn't actually offer them at that price and make a profit without AMD reimbursing them $100 in order to do so on each sale. And supposedly that rebate between AMD and the vendors is like now already expired, even though you can barely even get the card.
Can't buy the cards.
You can't even buy the cards. So, meaning that the vendors are up, you know, the OEM or the, you know, the resellers, they're just up to whatever pricing they need to do in order to be able to make a profit on the card. You know, basically price it at whatever they think they can sell it at, which would be $100 more at a minimum, which kind of throws a wrench in the whole, you know, like, I don't know, just looks a little bit kind of shady to me, because if you look at all their slides from their press announcements and everything, it was like, oh, these are the prices for these cards. Nobody said like introductory prices. That was just what the prices were. We thought that's what their MSRPs would be moving forward, but it appears that might not be the case. And so the card that they wanted to compete with the 1070, or at least was priced to do so, might not really be priced to do so anymore.
It's now getting spanked by the 1080. If these price reports are true, right? Because the other thing is, I have not been able to find an AMD Radeon 56 for sale anywhere.
There is that too. Which, you know, I mean, they
lots of 64s. Any that,
yeah. I mean, 56 would probably be the one that people would go for more. You know, it's more of a sweet spot on pricing. So maybe there was a certain amount of inventory they intended to go through at that particular price point, and then that's where AMD kind of called it and said, okay, you know, rebate's over. I don't know. We're still kind of waiting for some more info to come out there, but seems, you know, I was kind of hoping those prices were going to stick, right?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, you know, there's also a nice write-up from PC Gamer where they point out the title's really simple. RX Vegas inventory problems aren't due to cryptocurrency miners. And, you know, that might seem kind of obvious, you know, in retrospect. But, you know, it seems like it's just the way of launches to just not have enough inventory. So it looks sold out, creates desperation. People get excited about it. You know, the RX Vega is actually slated to arrive on, I guess, August 28th. I thought it was going to be shipping at the same time as the 64. Pricing is a bit of a mess, writes Jared Walton. I saw a $500 card at Newegg yesterday morning, but it has since disappeared. All Vega 64s are currently out of stock. It's not just me. It's frustrating. It just seems like completely normal, because he did some testing looking at, you know, Ethereum numbers, that it wasn't a spectacular, you know, the gains that people were claiming are not as spectacular as they claimed they were. You know, it's curious. You know, lots of demand for GPUs, limited supply. And, the 56 isn't going to launch until the 28th. My confusion on that one. But, you know, it would be nice if just once, you know, something was released with a lot of inventory, whether it's a game console, you know, a CPU, a GPU.
I'm with you.
So we wait with bated breath.
Yep.
And apparently the Vega embargo was originally going to be on the in September, which is kind of crazy. I'd be very curious to see what the supply is like on these parts and whether or not it's going to loosen up anytime soon. And I hope I hope that's not true, that the actual price of these cards is $100 higher, because there is no compelling reason to buy, other than that it's not NVIDIA.
Right.
Or you could maybe buy a less expensive FreeSync monitor over a G-Sync monitor, but I don't find it really compelling to spend an extra $100 for the same level of performance as a GTX 1080.
So. Exactly. That's my point of contention with it, and why I was saying I was hoping that the prices that they announced were going to stick, because those prices made sense. Right. Given the amount of performance those you were getting and where it compared with NVIDIA's product stack,
and they've done such a good job competing with Intel on CPUs. I mean, they've kind of nailed that pricing.
Yep.
Interesting. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by WordPress. We know that building something new, something that offers something for other people to connect to, is a lot easier if you got the right tools in your hands. That's why we're excited to have WordPress.com as a sponsor. We use WordPress.com every day, and let me tell you, whether you're looking to create a personal blog, a business site, or both, creating your website on WordPress.com helps others find you, remember you, and connect with you. You don't need experience. You don't need to hire someone, really. WordPress.com guides you through the entire process. They make it easy. They make it manageable. They have hundreds of beautiful designs to choose from. You get built-in search engine optimization and social sharing. Their business plan lets you access hundreds of plugins and themes. You can choose a WordPress.com plan, and you'll join a lively community where you'll have access to expert-friendly support. Come and see why 28% of all websites run on WordPress, the web's most popular and most powerful site-building platform. Get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to WordPress.com/Twitch to create your website and find the plan that is right for you. That's WordPress.com/TWICH for 15% off your brand new website. And we want to thank WordPress for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. WordPress.com/Twitch, people. Go check it out. And thank you, WordPress.com. Oh, my goodness. So, Something Ryan and I talked about last week was the Consumer Reports survey that suggested that basically they decided they were not going to they were no longer going to recommend Microsoft Surface laptops because of reliability issues, and there was a lot of like, well, it's a self-selecting group, well, you know, these aren't, you know, enthusiasts, Paul Thurrott has an amazing article. Here's what Microsoft is saying internally about Surface quality and reliability. He got a look at an internal Microsoft memo. And you might notice that in internal memos, organizations tend to be a little more blunt than they are with their public-facing communiques.
Yep.
But it's crazy.
That return rate seems awful high in that chart.
That return rate is brutal in that chart. And what's interesting about it, it's funny, right? You know, Panay says that Microsoft will continue to engage with Consumer Reports and try to learn from the survey and testing to improve things for customers and reverse their findings. And then you get down to what came out. Microsoft, first out of the gate with Skylake chips, I'm quoting right now from Thurrott.com, thus got caught up by this unreliability leading to a falling out with Intel. Microsoft's recent ARM push with Windows 10 is a result of that falling out. The software giant believes that Intel needs a counter to its dominance and that as of late 2016, AMD simply wasn't up to the task. Since then, however, another trusted source at Microsoft has provided a different take on this story, that Microsoft fabricated the story about Intel being the problems and that it was Surface-specific custom drivers and settings that Microsoft's hardware team cooked up created all the problems. And what made it go particularly nuclear inside of Microsoft was when Satya Nadella met with Lenovo last year. Yeah, how are you guys dealing with these Skylake reliability issues? Lenovo was like, what? Which apparently one can assume led to some difficult conversations inside of Redmond. It's a little frustrating it's a good read, and it's a little frustrating when people sort of blame what's going on with an organization or with a product on somebody else.
And then find out it was actually might have been them.
Yeah. Well, you know, what Paul basically says is, one, or I'll quote him so I don't screw it up. The Consumer Reports findings are skewed by Surface Book and Surface Pro 4 devices, which Microsoft's internal data proves suffered from massive reliability issues over a long period of time. Two, that Microsoft's internal data shows that it essentially fixed those products. Three, that subsequent Surface devices launched in far more reliable states. And four, that Surface customers, whatever the reason, are very happy with their purchases. So, you know, and one of the things he points out is there may be less correlation between product reliability and customer satisfaction with premium products, which is kind of crazy to think about. Like, I pay more for the fancy product, ergo I'm less stressed with it when it's unreliable. So, you know, Microsoft Surface has some reliability issues, and Microsoft believes it has turned the corner on those issues, which I would agree with because, you know, we've got a fair number of Microsoft Surface devices floating around, you know, within the arm's length in our universe. And there have been issues. They do seem to be resolved. But it was curious to read some of the sort of inside scuttlebutt coming from Microsoft sources in that article. And that it happened, and that maybe they weren't as upfront about that as they could have been. So,
yep.
We'll see. You got to look at Samsung's new portable SSD, the T5 USB 3.1 Gen 2, 10 gigabit per second, 500 gigabyte, and 2 terabyte drives. I want a 2 terabyte external SSD drive. Do I even want to know what that costs?
In this case, it, I believe, is $800.
Okay.
Kind of up there. It's 40 cents a gig.
That's more than I've got, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's pricey. I mean, you're getting 2 terabytes of solid-state storage, though. So this is sort of a refresh and sort of an upgrade, all in one product. So Samsung wanted to start putting their 64-layer VNAND into the external drive. Probably needed a controller update, maybe another couple of, you know, firmware tweaks, whatnot, just to make all that work. And I guess they figured while they're in there, well, let's just... It's time for a refresh anyway. You know, T3's been out for a year. Let's just update this thing. So they did. Uses a new ASMedia controller, which is capable of USB 3.1 Generation 2, which is 10 gigabit. All of the previous models, the T3 and the T1, were only 5 gigabit interface, connected to a 6 gigabit capable SATA, you know, internal mSATA part. So you were kind of losing a gigabit worth of throughput. You know, in those particular cases.
Right.
So, you know, new ASMedia chip lets you, you know, take more full advantage of the SATA speed. So now you're essentially seeing the full SATA device speed over USB as long as you're connected to a 10 gigabit USB port.
Okay.
And this applies if it's Type-C or Type-A connector, right? It doesn't really matter which style connector. Actually, the T5s come with both cables. Even though the port on the device is type C, they include a cable that goes, you know, type C to type C and a type C to type A cable.
Got it.
Which is handy because the T3 only came with a type C to type A cable. So if you wanted to go C to C, you had to buy your own cable. I still feel like those cables are a bit long. They're like a foot and a half long or a couple feet long almost. Which is kind of annoying to me personally, just because if I'm going to plug the thing in and it's a laptop sitting right on a table, I don't want the cord like going out, you know, however many feet, you know, and it's, I just want the device to be kind of close to the laptop. Maybe the usage is a little bit different if you intend to just have the cord constantly connected to a desktop or something and you want it to kind of like wrap around from behind the case and get to the front. But I don't see that as what the real use case would be for this, because if you were using it in that scenario, and now you're trying to go somewhere, if you just disconnected it and left the cable, you would need another cable. Tested some performance. Again, no surprises. You know, gets around 550 meg per second, which is around SATA 6 gigabit speeds. Pretty speedy. I tested on a Threadripper platform, because that's just happened to be what we had at the office up and running on a system that was... that had both, you know, Gen 1 and Gen 2 USB 3.1 controllers in them. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the 4K random in those charts there, it's like 62 meg per second worth of 4K random on that particular platform. Now, if you scroll down to like the last ADDO result there, which I think is one more, that result, which is 115 meg per second for 4K random, was on like a really old, you know, like a couple of year old, like Best Buy, you know, with some just kind of a cheesy Intel, brick and mortar store kind of just, you know, all put together system, just a real simple, minimalist kind of system. So nothing special, nothing fancy about it. And it wasn't even the USB 3.1 Gen 2 controller on it, as you can tell, because the max speed only goes to like 450 instead of 550.
Sure.
But the 4K random was twice as fast, which seems odd to me. And that you get that same kind of a result if we test it on any other Intel platform, even with the same ASMedia USB 3.0 controller that we tested that was present connected to the Threadripper platform in our testing here. So it kind of suggests that there might be some weird thing going on with latency sensitivity. Specific to like Ryzen / Threadripper, because we saw the same kind of latency sensitivity, not for USB connected testing, but we were doing NVMe stuff back when we did the first Ryzen review, and we noticed that for random access, the latencies, you know, were pushed out a little bit longer for each request, meaning you couldn't get as high of IOs per second serviced at the, you know, at the smaller sizes when you were doing a bunch of them rapidly. So something I'm probably going to look into a little bit more, just on a platform thing, but I didn't want to dig into it too much on this particular piece because, again, we were just trying to test, external USB drive and see how it did generally compared to the last one. So you get that under extra 100 meg per second. You're using the newer type of flash. I mean, the type of flash, really, the reliability of these things is pretty much the same across generations at this point. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. It'd be really hard to throw enough wear at this thing to wear it out within a typical person using it over, you know, the warranty period's 3 years, but the same kind of flash as in other products that, you know, with even 5 year warranties on them. So I kind of wouldn't expect you to have issues with the flash. And I did take this one apart just to make sure that, you know, it was reasonably easy. There's just like a label on one end. You can peel it back. The reason I say this is because people are sometimes concerned that if something fails in their external drive, say they had a bad USB port and it kind of like zapped something because the voltage was too high or whatnot. It's just an MSATA part in there. So you can, you know, if you open the drive, you could potentially just do your own data recovery as long as the thing that failed was on the interface board side and not, you know, and you didn't damage the actual MSATA part. But, you know, it kind of makes things easy to be able to access your data. Hopefully it's not the only copy, but in case it is, you know, at least your odds are a little bit better that you'd be able to get it back reasonably cheaply without having to send it off somewhere. Prices for all the models come to around 40 cents a gig. Price goes up a little bit more for the 250 gig model because that normally would be, I think it normally would be like $100, but it's 130. Because once you get down to that low of a price point, eventually you have to spend some money on like the, you know, the housing, and like that starts being a higher percentage of the overall cost,
right?
The 250 and 500 gig models are this bluish color, and then the 1 terabyte and 2 terabyte are black. That's about it. I mean, I kind of replaced my recommendation for the T3 with this newer model. Just kind of makes sense. And on the podcast last night, I even recommended to some folks to look out for deals on the T3, which they also did sell in a 2 terabyte model. So you're going to have places that might be clearing out their stock to start carrying T5s in the 2 terabyte capacity. You could potentially get a 2 terabyte T3, maybe as some kind of a discount.
There are worse things than a deal. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Ring's mission to make neighborhoods safer. Today, over 1 million people use the amazing Ring Video Doorbell to help protect their homes, including our regular co-host, Mr. Ryan Schratt. He's got one at home. He's got one at the office. Ring knows home security begins at the front door, but it doesn't end there. That's why they're extending that same level of security to the rest of your home with the Ring Floodlight Cam. Just like Ring's video doorbell, Floodlight Cam is a motion-activated camera and floodlight that connects to your phone. With HD video and two-way audio, it lets you know the moment anyone steps in your property. See and speak to visitors, even set off an alarm right from your phone. With Ring's Floodlight Cam, when things go bump in the night, you'll immediately know what it is. Whether you're home or away, the Ring Floodlight Cam lets you keep an eye on your home, which is nice. It's comforting. Ring's Floodlight Cams offers the ultimate in home security with high-visibility floodlights and a powerful HD camera that puts security in your hands. Named the Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017, monitor every corner of your property with the Ring of Security Kit. All kits include a Ring Video doorbell and your choice of either one, two, or three floodlight cams. Connect your Ring Video doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for added convenience, monitoring, and security. People, they want you to feel safe in your home. With Ring, you're always home. Save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/twitch. That's ring.com/TWICH. We want to thank Ring for their support. And Ryan wants to thank Ring for making him feel a little safer at home and at the office. It's nice. It's convenient. And not just safety. When the UPS guy shows up at the office, if Ryan's not there, he can talk to him over the Ring video doorbell. It's slick, people. It's good stuff. You were at Flash Memory Summit last week. There was fires, but no brimstone. We talked a little bit about what was going on there last week. Any kind of big thoughts? You know, I mean, we talked about the Ruler SSD form factor, the 1 petabyte and 1U chassis, Samsung's QLC V-NAND. Are you expecting, you know, we talked about memory prices going up for video cards. Will we continue to see declines in prices on SSDs, or is at some point that going to stall and stop, you know, the what Ryan would like to call the inevitable march to 10 cents a gigabyte he so eagerly anticipates?
Well, the price is probably, I would consider it more like level at the moment, as far as flash memory prices go. They were creeping up a little bit. Or, you know, it's not like they were skyrocketing because there was a crazy shortage. People kept using the term shortage for a while there, but it was really just that the demand was outstripping the supply, which I guess technically is a shortage, but it was that the demand was increasing like a lot, right? The supply was also increasing, just not as quickly. I think things are kind of starting to level off now, and I mean, at some point, yeah, it'll probably start coming down again. You know, the way that producers are able to get these prices to come down is just, you know, in a roundabout way, is just by whatever their next step is. For example, Samsung at Flash Memory Summit announced what they're calling their fifth generation V-NAND, which is really just same 64-layer stuff as the fourth generation, but they're now claiming that they can do 4 bits per cell. Right, just like what Toshiba announced. Right. And that's supposed to be able to get them all the way up to 1 terabit per die per each chip. Not each package, because they can stack them like 16 high in there. But you could potentially have like a couple of, you know, almost a couple of gigabytes in a die now, if you wanted to go, or in a package, sorry, if you wanted to go crazy high on how much you were stacking them. So, you know, the prices, yeah, eventually they'll hit 10 cents a gig. I just, you know, Ryan's wish is not yet fulfilled. That's I'm as sorry as I am to say it, because I'd like flash memory and SSDs to be like super cheap and super accessible by everybody.
Right.
But, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, I think you guys covered the majority of the goodies from Flash Memory Summit last week.
Grab bag of stories, mostly around mobile to wrap up the show. HomePod, the device from Apple to compete with the Echo and Sonos and Google Home and everything else on the planet. The firmware for that keeps being the gift that keeps on giving, because evidence of a 4K Apple TV has been dug out from deep within the HomePod firmware. Could be a false flag. Could be something that is coming in the near future. But given that Apple's talking about spending $1 billion on content this year to get into the content war with Netflix and everybody else, I think it'll be curious to see if they do actually deliver a 4K Apple TV, or literally a 4K TV featuring Apple, but I'm not holding my breath on that one. Qualcomm's got some depth sensing technology they're going to be integrating into the chipsets. We've seen Google's Project Tango, we've seen Intel's RealSense. We expect something like this to come out with the iPhone 7, but we're looking at sort of a regular camera, an IR illuminator, an IR camera, that's going to work to advance security on mobile devices, 3D reconstruction of physical objects with depth sensing. As Ryan put it, it looks like a race to integration for Android and Apple smartphones and devices. Qualcomm Spectre ISP and a module program will accelerate adoption in the large and financially variable Android market. So, of course, Apple controls everything, from the field to the plate. But it'll be curious to see what comes out of these and whether or not people actually care when they do ship, which might sound cruel and mean, but... on the Android side of things, I thought it was also interesting that the OnePlus T, Android Police had a great article. I thought this was crazy. Android O is going to be the last major version update for the OnePlus 3 and 3T, according to OnePlus's head of product. What makes that particularly cruel is technically it would be a third operating system upgrade, because I want to say the OnePlus 3T shipped with Marshmallow. And we'll get the next generation, Android O. But that also means that it's going to be its last operating system update for a nine-month-old phone, which seems kind of cruel when you think about it as being a flagship-level phone. On the flagship phone front, Essential is going to be shipping within seven days. And I thought that was pretty exciting. We've been kind of following Essential for a few months. That's the phone by the guy that kind of launched Android, and I'll be curious to see the reviews on those when they get out. Good looking phone, and hopefully better operating system support than we've been seeing in a lot of areas. I also thought the Crate 9to5Google.com article that the Pixel 2 will have Active Edge, a squeeze feature. just sounds highly amusing to me. The second screenshot below also revealed a rumored HTC U11-like squeeze functionality, though it's branded as Active Edge under a new languages input and gestures setting on DP4. That corresponding setting is just languages and input. In this particular setup, it is set to launch with the Google Assistant on Squeeze, writes Abner Lee on 9to5google.com. So I thought squeezy phones just was too amusing to not get into. So... are you good with your phone at this point? Or are you contemplating an upgrade, Alan?
I'm waiting to see what Apple does. I mean,
seems reasonable.
Seems to kind of make sense to hold out. And I haven't, even my wife and I haven't really been crazy on upgrading. We're running on phones that are like upwards of a couple years old now. Trying to not, spend insane amounts of money on whatever phone once a year.
The phone
trying
of the minute.
Trying to reduce that a little
bit. Phone of the day.
Yep.
That makes sense. PCPro.com is the place to find more of Mr. Malventano's work. What anything you can tease that's coming up on the site, or do you have to keep it under wraps at this point?
I think most of the stuff we're testing right now is still under NDAs. Yeah, but there's, got a lot of testing going on. That's about all I can say.
So much testing.
There'll be storage stuff coming.
Oh, yep. Man. You can find more of my work over at techzilla.com or at avxl.com, the home theater and audio podcast I hold with Mr. Robert Herron. And we want to thank you for joining us on Twitch this week. You can find all of our older episodes at twit.tv/twitch, along with information on how to subscribe if you're new to the podcast and want to get more. And as always, you can contact me at Patrick Norton. If people have storage questions, what's the best Twitter handle for you, sir?
I'm just at Malventano, if you can figure out how to spell it.
Fortunately, Google can help with that. Or you can go to PCPer.com, search for a storage article, and find Alan Malventano there, and thus figure out how to spell Malventano. On that bright and cheerful note, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Alan Melvin Tunnel.
And I'll see you next week.